This is The End User, episode 107 for Friday, September 7th, The Kindle User. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am presumptive party nominee, Taylor Moore.
That's a good one. So you've been watching all the political things going on?
No, what political things?
You know, the national conventions and whatnot.
What, they were this week?
Man, you need to get out of your technology sphere for just a little while, Taylor.
I wonder everybody stopped calling me. They were supposed to... Wait, just the Republican and the Democrat conventions, right?
Right.
Okay, phew. And my party is still safe.
The Green Party.
No, that's a different party, Chris. They stole our word.
Ah, I see. Well, so anyway, we're not here to talk about politics. So what's going on in technology? I hear some big news has happened since we were last podcasting. What's going on with Amazon?
Amazon had a big... hubbub in Southern California today, that is Thursday, the day we're recording, and announced a whole new line of Kindles. Almost nothing is the same. I guess the Kindle Fire is still around in its old form, although they're lowering its price to $160, $170.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. I mean, to get something that cheap is just kind of wild, isn't it?
I guess so. I mean, it was basically a year ago that they offered it for $200, so they're not dropping it by that much. But the real wow to me is that the cheapest Kindle is now down to $70, and the new Kindle Fire HD starts at just $299.
Yeah, so what's up with the Kindle Fire HD? It's an 8.9-inch version with a 1920 by 1200 pixel display. And what does it start at? What'd you say?
Well, so the 8.9-inch HD version starts at $300.
Starts at $300. So do you think at $300, do you think this thing starts to get compared to the iPad? Or do you think it's a different device altogether? Or
I think next month we'll be comparing this to an iPad. but right now, it's kind of in a class all its own. Yeah. If anything, it's compared more favorably to the Nexus 7.
Yeah, I'd probably lump it in there as well. Although the Nexus 7 is cheaper, right? It's $200, but I guess it's closer to that. And yeah, we'll see what Apple has with the new iPad, right?
Right. So you got a 7-inch Amazon or Kindle Fire HD running at 1280 by 800. So already a higher resolution than their old one, and about the same as the Nexus 7. And then the 9-inch Fire HD is running at 1920 by 1200.
Yeah, and that's pretty impressive. I mean, that's rounding up on 254 pixels per inch. So that's getting up there for
just
a screen that
just
big.
Just a little bit shy of the Retina display iPad.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a better resolution than my netbook does, I'll tell you that much.
Well, most tablets do at this point.
Yeah, in this day and age. I got to get a new laptop is what that means, doesn't it?
Right. So, but even their e-paper Kindle is getting a price drop and an upgrade. It's getting a special fiber optic front lighting, and they're going to call it Paperwhite. And it's getting a resolution upgrade, too. This is the first time that a mass market e-ink device has gotten a resolution boost. And so now it's up to 1024 by 768 for a 212 pixels per inch.
Right. So it's a little weird to even think about resolution of an e-ink screen, but they're dependent upon the manufacturers, right?
Right. And I think e-ink was definitely overdue for a resolution boost.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're not going to be watching videos on this thing, but it's all about the fonts.
Yeah, I mean, you want to be able to read clear, crisp text, and pretty much every single one—the the Kindle, the Nook, the Kobo, the Sonys—all of their 7-inch e-readers were running at 800 by 600 up until now.
Yeah, and so they've
and that,
got this.
That was a little granular to me. I definitely would appreciate this kind of upgrade.
So they've got this built-in light that will light the screen, but not like a backlight, because you can't have that with e-ink, I think. but they, it's more like a nightlight kind of thing, you know, more like how you'd actually read a book. Or maybe you remember the old watches that had the kind of light that turned on in the middle?
Right. Well, that was kind of a side light. And that's sort of what the Barnes & Noble Nook, their lighted version had. It was a highly engineered side light that was designed to provide even lighting. But the way that Amazon has explained this, it's sort of a flattened fiber optic channel that funnels light down onto the paper. And so that all you get is light reflected back through the fiber optics and into your eye.
Truly weird. We'll have to get our eyes on one of these things and see how that actually works, because I'm really curious to see what that screen looks like, because, you know, for reading, that's really important. It's a little bit frustrating to use the Kindle, you know, with like a book light that seems kind of goofy in the wrong direction. So it'll be interesting to see if this thing actually works or not.
True, it will be, although I suspect it'll work just fine.
Yeah, and another thing is this new device is just kind of beautiful and simple and elegant. If you go back and look at the first Kindle, these things just completely blow it away from a design perspective.
Yeah, true. They're all getting very iPad-like.
And it's 9.1 millimeters thick, so that's pretty good. That's pretty thin.
Right. So there was basically no upgrade to the entry-level model. They just dropped the price down to $69. And so that's still without a touchscreen, without the front lighting. But the new Paperwhite version, and that is touchscreen capable too, is only $119. And then there's a 3G version, which probably a lot of people don't buy that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine just not using the Wi-Fi on these things. I guess, you know, you pay up front once. That's not so bad now that I think about it. But if you had to pay some, like, data charges, that would be a real deal breaker. But, I mean, the first Kindle coming in at $70, that's hard to pass up
However,
for any other Kindle.
The new top-of-the-line Kindle Fire, the Fire HD with LTE, it's going to have LTE, which is really fast. It's plenty fast. And they are going to charge data access, but it's going to be way cheaper than any other LTE plan out there. It's going to be $50 a year.
Wow. So not a month? That's what I was expecting. I was waiting for the punchline.
Nope. $50 a year.
Yeah. So I wonder what Amazon has to pay for that access in the first place.
And you get $10 of Amazon store credit with that.
Yeah, and that brings up a point. I mean, these are devices that are intended to just funnel you into Amazon stuff, like Amazon Music, and it's intended to funnel all of your money into Amazon through this device.
Yeah, Amazon is marketing that as a feature.
Right. And well, in some ways it is a feature. I mean, if you're very Amazon centric, then it kind of makes sense to do that. But can Amazon really compete as like an operating systems customizer kind of thing? I'm not sure I get the complete picture of what they're doing to customize their tablets when compared to like stock Android on the Nexus 7, for example. That picture seems a little murky and weird to me, and I feel like I'd rather just have the stock Android tablet.
True, I see where you're going with that. And definitely if you compare the old Kindle Fire to the Nexus 7, the Nexus 7 is going to be a better experience in just about every way. But, you know, maybe they've learned a thing or two, and maybe they can take a lighter touch, you know, and leave it closer to the stock experience, but just have more of a curated marketplace for content and for apps. And maybe if they do that exactly right, then they'll have a nice experience. But otherwise, no, I agree that the stock Google experience is going to be better.
Yeah, I mean, what they had going for them previously was that they were the cheapest thing out there. And with the Nexus 7 out there now, that's not really the case. I guess there's no...
Well, no, they're still the cheapest thing out there.
Oh, right.
They're offering their Fire for cheaper than the Nexus 7.
You're correct. I was thinking the HD version, and that's $199. That's the real competitive area there. Yeah, you're right. But even still, I mean, $160, $200, it's a little... It's pretty close. I feel like I would rather just go with the Nexus 7 at this point. But what is interesting is their 8.9-inch version. That is a little bit unique. There's no Nexus 8.9, as much as I'd like there to be, and there's no Nexus 10-inch tablet. There are plenty of Android tablets that kind of fill that niche, but I haven't seen one that looks as enticing as the Nexus 7 does.
Yeah, true.
All right, well, let's move on to our next story. It's still about Amazon, though. They're adding voice and Whisper Sync for games. Whisper Sync previously is what would sync your page when you were reading on the Kindle, particularly on the Kindle 3G. That was interesting because it would always be in sync, and that's probably the biggest argument for having a 3G Kindle in the first place. But they're adding this to audiobooks, it looks like.
Yeah, as well as for games.
Yeah, that's the cool part too. You won't lose your place. I don't know how many times I've had to like hard reset my phone or something, and it's a little difficult to back up all of your games with the, you know, positions that you've achieved in those games. It's a little bit tough.
Yeah, I don't know how the iPhone handles that. I've never had to really restart, but I'm not sure how it's backing it up.
Yeah, well, I know at least in iOS you can back up everything statefully into iTunes, isn't that right?
You can, but that's kind of an obsolete feature. Now it backs up everything to iCloud, but then that's sort of an invisible backup.
But does that backup include the position that you are in a game?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know what the iCloud backup includes.
Right. So I'm pretty sure in iTunes it does include your position in a game. I'm not so sure about iCloud.
Yeah, it definitely includes app data.
As far as the Whisper Sync for the Amazon devices, this just seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? Every platform should have something like this, whether it's Amazon or Google or iOS.
I guess so. I mean, I love it in iOS because if something crashes, then it can be restored. And that's definitely great on all platforms. But the other reason that it's great for iOS is because a lot of people have an iPhone and an iPad, and you want syncing to happen between there. But I don't think a lot of people before or in the next year are going to end up with two Kindles that they're using concurrently.
I mean, what I mostly use this for is between the Kindle for desktop application and my Kindle and my phone. So it's not necessarily about having two Kindle devices unto themselves, but just having your apps be in sync with your actual Kindle. That's what it's about for me.
Okay, but how does Whisper Sync Voice and Whisper Sync Games help you there?
Yeah, I guess that's true. It doesn't really help in that case because, you know, I'm not going to sit down at my Core i7 workstation and start playing Angry Birds in Chrome or something like that. So
you could, but I don't think it would sync.
Yeah, no, not in Chrome. It would have to be in Kindle. That gets a little weird, I suppose.
Yeah, no, it doesn't get weird. It's just there's no option for that.
So what I would love to see this for on some platforms is podcasting. That would be fantastic to have a cloud position syncing system for podcasts. That would be awesome.
Yeah, true.
So I don't know.
Apple does it with iTunes and any iOS or iPod device. But not over the cloud.
Right. That's what I want to see.
That would be cool. We should get on that.
Okay. But I've trademarked it, so you'll have to license it for me. No, I can't trademark it that quickly. I don't care. I don't want to trademark it. I just want somebody to do it. Implement it.
Okay. Implement it. How much do you want someone to implement a flagship Windows 8 phone?
Yes. A lot. And it looks like Nokia is doing that. So Nokia has revealed their new Windows 8 phones, the Lumia 820 and 920. And
yeah, these are amazing phones, or at least they look like it. At least they look like they will be, because they haven't said when, where, or how much.
No, they pulled a Palm Pre on us, so we don't know when these things are going to come out. But they're in the pipeline, I guess, and we got like a sneak preview kind of thing. Now, this is going to be the next generation, right? This is where Microsoft makes the split once again for the second time to a new version of Windows Phone. And this is Windows Phone 8. And, you know, it's like a back-end change, but then all the apps are compatible. So it's going to come out of the gate with a bunch of apps. And the Nokia hardware just looks fantastic, doesn't it?
It sure does. I mean, we said that when the 800 and the 900 came out.
Yeah, so it's got that similar design metaphor of the kind of bright colored back, and you know, they've got a pretty large screen on these things. It's the 920 has a 4.5-inch screen, and the 820 has a 4.3-inch screen. So those are both pretty big, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't know. They're not Android big.
No, I remember when, I think it was the Motorola Droid X was like 4.3, and we thought that was ridiculous at the time. And those Android phones just kept marching on and on and up until the Galaxy Note, I suppose, right?
Right, or the Optimus View.
Right. How big was the Optimus View? Do you remember?
5.3 or something.
5.3, I think it was.
The Galaxy Note 2 now is 5.5. And that's a phone, supposedly.
So the big thing that they're pushing on these devices is the camera lens. You know, they always push the Carl Zeiss lens, and that continues to be true here. But what's really interesting is that on the bigger model, on the 920, they actually have the camera like attached to springs so that it floats around and gives you some image stabilization in hardware instead of in software, like some other platforms. Some other platforms do it in software, and this is actually before you even do any image processing. So that seems kind of neat.
I guess so. I'm not sure why I want that in my phone.
Yeah, it is a little weird making the niche camera play to try and sell your phones. Most people in my experience just don't really care how good or bad the picture is. You know, most people are satisfied with what's going on with cameras, and I'm not sure that that's going to help them sell a bunch of phones. Now, if you are some kind of image enthusiast, I mean, you're going to have a real camera, right?
Right.
So, and they're 8 megapixels, by the way. No 41 megapixels like we saw that one Symbian phone.
Oh, good. They must have got rid of the other 33 megapixels for that physical stabilization hardware.
Yeah, for the floating camera mechanism.
So, but the thing that excites me about this is the industry standard wireless charging.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal. And remember the Pre did this? And
I remember it very well. I saw it in action several times.
What happened to it?
Well, it was just a little bit finicky.
Yeah, I mean, I really was excited about wireless charging, and I couldn't wait to get it, you know, on all kinds of devices, and it largely just kind of fell away. And this is like the reintroduction of wireless charging, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, I guess it shares the technology with a handful of BlackBerries that have it. Or at least have replaceable covers that can include it.
Right. I know there was like the PowerMat would sell you a cover or something that would allow you to kind of add it to your phone. But that's not going to work unless it's built in.
No, right? But that wasn't really a cover. It was like more of a case.
Yeah, it was a case. But unless it's built in, it's not the best solution, I don't think.
Well, these are essentially built in.
Yeah, exactly right. And I want to see this.
Even the Pre version was not completely built in.
Yeah, that's right. You had to get a custom back, I suppose.
Right.
And that had the like receiver in it. So not even that was completely built in. I'd really like to see this start to come to other phones. And this is the first in line to do so other than the Pre. And I'd really just like to see this come to other phones because I'm sick and tired of plugging in a little connector to charge it. Am I asking too much?
You just really don't like cords of any kind.
No, they need to go away, all of them.
As long as it's one or two, I don't mind it that much.
Yeah, that's true. It's from managing all the wires on my desktop that gets me really upset about how many wires I've got going around here.
Right. Maybe you should focus on that problem.
Yeah, so as an iPhone user...
Instead of your crusade against wires.
So as an iPhone user, what do you think about this, about Windows Phone 8 in general? You think that's got a chance at all?
Well, as an iPhone user, no, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think I'm allowed to think that Windows Phone 8 has a chance. But I don't know. I'll just have to see it. I'll have to play with it. And I feel like Windows Phone 7 just got here, and I barely had a chance to test it out. I saw the Lumia 900. I thought about getting it for about a minute, and then they came out with a new one, and they said, oh, this one's obsolete, so this one's not out, and they haven't said when it's coming out. So if it comes out this year, that would be good. If it comes out next year, it's too late.
Yeah, and there's an iPhone announcement coming up soon, so we'll see how they fare against the new iPhone, or whatever they're going to call it.
True. So if the if the Windows 8 flagship phones don't come out until January 2013, that's 6 years after the introduction of the iPhone.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up with that. I mean,
and it's too long.
I mean, the iPhone, for whether you like the iPhone or not, I mean, it's got a big mature marketplace, and same thing with Android, even though they were a little bit later. Developers have had time to work with these things, and there's very little time here, although they will have plenty of apps because they're compatible with Windows Phone 7 apps, but it'll take some time before developers can really get their teeth into the new Windows Phone 8 API, and there's not going to be enough time for this round of phones, but it's we have to look in like a year and see where the market's at to see if it's starting to get critical mass. Because I feel like with Windows Phone 7, you know, I'm still missing a bunch of things. You know, I don't have my local banking app. I don't have a couple of other things. And that's how you know that it's kind of not mainstream right now. Even if the device is fantastic, they're just not going to get mainstream unless they can entice developers and entice companies to hire developers to make them applications. So we'll see how that part goes. That's the key to it, I think.
Yeah, I guess so. But if it's a slow development, you know, for these companies to pick up Windows developers to make these apps, if it's too slow, it's just not going to work.
Yep, we'll see. I'll give it a year before I make a judgment of some sort.
Right. Okay, speaking of cutting-edge operating systems and Android phones, Motorola has just announced three new versions of the Droid Razr. Now, this is probably the first major Motorola announcement since it was officially acquired by Google.
Right, and these all look pretty interesting, don't they? I mean, we've got let's name them out right here. We've got the Droid Razr HD and the Droid Razr Max with two X's, HD, and the Droid Razr M, and they all kind of have a their own little niche. The Droid Razr Max has a 3,300 milliamp hour battery. That's crazy.
Sure. Well, the whole point of the Razr Max is that it's a Razr with a crazy battery.
Yeah, so they say that you can get through 32 hours of normal use with this thing. That's incredible.
No, Chris, that is average.
32 hours? There's no way my phone would ever make it 32 hours.
Yeah, that is a defect in your phone. 32 hours of normal use is a normal amount of normal use. This is all phones should have, roughly that amount.
No, I get about a day, and it probably starts to conk out around midnight or so.
But what you have to have is a day of heavy use.
No, I definitely don't get that. If I use it, it'll need charging when I get home from work, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, but, like, what if you're out and about all day, and you're using your phone? You gotta use your phone.
I need wireless charging to be delivered with my 3G signal. That's what I need.
Okay, that's just... You can't have that.
Oh.
That's not a thing.
No, it's not a thing yet.
Right. So the Razr HD and the Razr Max HD are basically just improvements on the previous generation. And so now they've bumped it up to 4.7-inch Super AMOLED HD screen and a bigger battery, obviously. And then they've got the Droid Razr M, which is a little bit of a smaller version. Amazing, like we said before, a 4.3-inch display is the little brother version of these phones.
Yeah, and the Droid Razr HD is 4.7. So, yeah, the 4.3. Android phones have just gotten ridiculous. I kind of wish that there was a phone that was powerful and ran Android, but was 3.7 inches or something like that.
Well, the original Droid Incredible was 3.7 and was quite powerful at the time. And I think the Droid Incredible LTE is only up to 4, but is still quite powerful.
Yeah. Well, clearly that's the sweet spot, although, like we mentioned earlier, Android manufacturers just keep reaching for the sky with the Galaxy Note and the like.
Yeah, they do. Why do they keep doing that?
I don't know. Very strange.
Very strange indeed. Anyway, so I think that these new Droid phones are all going to be on Verizon. So if you are a Verizon using Android lover, these are some interesting phones to check out.
Yeah, I mean, they've all got ice cream sandwich. That's one of the other important things. You know, if you're using a version previous to ice cream sandwich, then it's a pretty big upgrade in terms of the kind of cleanliness of the operating system. And I think ice cream sandwich is Google prettying up Android in the first place, and these are the droids for Verizon, and that's probably a pretty good place to be.
Sure, although you could pick up the Galaxy Nexus, and that's got ice cream sandwich as well.
Yes.
Or maybe that's up to Jelly Bean now, isn't it?
I don't know. I'd have to look that one up.
I think so.
All right. Well, with that, we're done with our top news finally. I said that was going to take up most of the podcast, and let's get into our afterburn. So turn them on, buckle your seatbelt, Mr. Marr.
Okay, ready.
So Lenovo is releasing its IdeaPad S300, S400, and S405. And there's somewhere between a Ultrabook and a Netbook. They're $499, and they kind of look, they have this like glossy MacBook look. It's kind of interesting. So
the old school plastic MacBooks,
right?
But with the thinness of an Ultrabook.
So if that sounds good to you, hit up the show notes in the Afterburner section, and you can get some more details about these ultra low voltage Core i3 and i5 laptops.
Yeah, I think they look pretty distinctive in a good way.
They do. They look a little different.
Okay. Now, Sony's 4K TV that's coming out this year that we talked about last week now has a price tag. It's $25,000, so you're probably not going to buy it. I'm definitely not.
No, I can't afford a $25,000 TV, but man, that does look pretty nice.
It's way more expensive than four TVs. you just put four TVs next to each other.
Now, if you look at it in a different light, it's just 0.3 cents per pixel.
Yeah, I feel like four TVs still way cheaper. And finally, our last afterburner is almost a tip or a kicker, and that is you can now play old school Atari games in your web browser using HTML5. Microsoft and Atari teamed up to launch Atari Arcade for HTML5, and it's got Asteroid, Centipede, Combat, Lunar Lander, Missile Command, Pong, Super Breakout, and Yar's Revenge. So if you have a hankering for any of these games, all you have to do is go to your web browser, and you can even play it on your phone.
Yeah, it's pretty neat that HTML5 has these kind of animation capabilities. So definitely worth a look. And with that, let's turn off the afterburners and let's get into the end user stories. I've got one that I'm passing along from Neelai Patel over at The Verge, and he's talking about he calls it the myth of pinch to zoom. And it just reminded me, because we were talking last week about the Apple versus Samsung case and why they were.
Right. And it was a patent case at its heart. And so the question was, what patents did Apple maintain exclusive rights over?
Right. And it, as it turns out, if you actually look at the patent, Apple doesn't really have a patent on pinch to zoom. It has a patent on how it particularly implements pinch to zoom, which is a little, it can be a little misleading. There's a lot of people around the press that point out that Apple has a pinch to zoom multi-touch. But like we pointed out last week, there's all kinds of prior art to this, and there's no way that they could patent that kind of thing. That particular gesture has been around for a long time, but not on a phone. And they have a patent for how it's implemented on a phone in one particular way. So it's can be a little bit misleading.
Okay, yeah. It's definitely misleading, but Apple's got a lot of patents. So Neelai Patel has aggregated a lot of other people's parsing of these patents and the lawsuit that decided on them, and then did a bit of his own research to figure out just what patents are Apple's alone and what what isn't, what can be used by everybody else, which, as it turns out, includes pinch to zoom.
Right. So here's the example that is really, really clear about this. The pinch to zoom one is actually a little bit vague, but the way the iPhone bounces back when you reach the end of a list, that is patented by Apple. You cannot rip that off without risking Apple suing you. But what you can do...
I couldn't live without that bounce back.
It's nice. Now, what Google does is, instead of having the actual page bounce back, they have a color kind of flood up that gives you the same kind of feeling. So that's a perfect example of the way something is implemented in a different way, but kind of gives the same feel. So in that case, you wouldn't really say that anything bouncing back is patented by Apple, and they're stifling innovation and so on and so on. But they do have that particular mechanism of bouncing back patented, and you can't rip that off.
Okay, so that's a pretty good example. So how many of these things do you think that Apple has a particular way over? And I don't know, I think, you know, I was kidding when I said I couldn't live without the bounce back, but I do think it's a pretty important feature of a multi-touch UI.
It is to have something that gives you that feeling of, hey, this is the end of the list and there's no more to scroll here. It's definitely important to have that kind of thing. And
it just stops. I mean, you can't patent it, just stops.
No. But the way Google did it, where they have the color kind of flood and bounce back up in the same way without having the page do it, it solves the same problem in a different way. And it gives the same kind of satisfaction of, oh, I've reached the end of the list here. And the other crystal clear example is Slide to Unlock. I think we talked about this last week, how on Android, you get this on a lot of Android phones, you get this kind of like puck and you fling it away in any direction. Whereas Apple has patented the slide to unlock across a fixed area. So that's a little bit different.
Yeah, now here I feel like Apple is a little bit behind the curve here. Slide to unlock isn't that great. I'd rather have the Android version.
Well, also
especially that dandelion.
The dandelion, yeah.
You flick the dandelion and that unlocks the screen.
Yeah, and The other bit to that is Windows Phone also does something a little bit different. It goes in the up direction, whereas Apple goes side to side. So anyway, I just thought that all of that was kind of interesting, particularly given what we talked about last week with the Samsung and Apple case. And I'm sure we're going to see more litigation. Don't let that get in the way of knowing about what these patents are all about.
All right, well, if we're done with patents for now, I'd like to talk about my green tech story of the week.
Yeah, patents are boring. Let's get into green tech, Taylor.
All right, well, this one's a little bit more exciting, especially if you're into green tech like I am. So this is looking at the total aggregate power generation of the U.S. Over 2011. Ah, geez. That doesn't sound much more exciting, does it? But here's the thing. About a third of all new power generation in the U.S. came from wind, and that's a huge rise. In fact, in the last couple of years, it's been over 30% almost every year since 2006.
Yeah, that's kind of that's shocking to me. I wouldn't have thought that it would be anywhere near one third.
Right. So a lot of people have actually been talking about the decline of solar. Solar panels are still being come out, and they're still becoming cheaper. But some of the major manufacturers of solar panels are either heavily subsidized by a government. A lot of them are in Germany, and the German government is subsidizing it, and the U.S. government is trying to help out. A few here as well. But everybody's been talking about the decline of solar as if that's the end-all be-all for the renewable energy sector. But it turns out wind has just been jumping way up. China has installed like three times as much solar power or wind power as the U.S. over the last couple of years. And even here, wind accounts for the majority of new power generation.
So now, are we seeing this because solar cells are expensive and hard to maintain and wind is not? Is that kind of the driving factor that we're looking at here?
Yeah, basically, I mean, we're reaching a zenith of we're learning the structural limits of what wind turbines can generate. And so now it's become really cheap to build these very large wind turbines, and there's a lot of wind all over the U.S. especially.
Yeah, there's a lot of wind everywhere.
Right, and so you can capture it very cheaply with these new turbine technologies, but it takes a couple of years of development to get those turbines into place.
So look out, coal. Wind's coming for you.
Right, and gas, and solar.
Yeah, it's actually that is an oversimplification. The whole idea of all of the renewable energy is hybrid systems with all kinds of renewable energy, not one particular type.
In the long term, when we look at renewable energy taking over a lot of the grid's demand, you want both solar and wind.
Right.
Wind tends to be stronger at the beginning and the end of the day and overnight, whereas solar only gets energy during the middle of the day.
Right. So hybrid systems are the way to go.
Right. And within hybrid systems, wind and solar are natural complements.
Hand in hand. Well, I can think of a few things that are not hand in hand, and one of them is AirPlay and Android. But you've got a really cool tip of the week for us. What's up with Hi-Fi?
Yeah, so it's an Android app called Android Hi-Fi that works with AirPlay, which is Apple's wireless streaming service. So iTunes will work with it, or you could stream from an Apple TV, although I'm not sure why you would want to in this case, or you could stream from any iOS device. And so the idea is you use your Android device as an AirPlay receiver. And so you can play stuff on your Android phone.
So here's what I want it for. Forget about the phone bit for a second. I just want to take an old Android phone that I have lying around the corner there and hook it up to some speakers and have it take place of an Apple TV. That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, heck yes. Hook it up to a TV.
Sure.
So I thought that was pretty cool. This is a free app.
Even better.
Yep. And so let's say you want to take advantage of more AirPlay, but you don't have an Android phone. Let's say you have a lot of iPhones, or maybe iPhones and iPads, or maybe a bunch of your friends with iPhones are around. Then you can stream music simultaneously to all of them using an app called Cedio.
What?
So let's, you know, I'm hanging out with a bunch of friends. A lot of us have iPhones or iPads, but we don't have any, you know, real speakers. So using this app called Cedio, we can play the same music from the same phones at exactly the same time and turn it into a large distributed speaker.
Interesting. So I'm also thinking you could have a bunch of iPhones and have it be a, what's the expensive streaming whole home streaming option.
Sonos,
thank you. You could also kind of have this be a replacement for Sonos. If you
sure. And actually just plug it into speakers in different rooms.
And then just hide the phone.
Oh, that is interesting. I like that.
Yeah, so you could have a, you could play like Muzak throughout your entire home as if it were a grocery store. No, that is the worst realization of my initial vision that could have possibly been thought of. So
it's pretty bad.
But no, I think that would be kind of interesting is to have a bunch of these little stations around the house and play the same thing to all of them, particularly, if, you know, during a party or something, you know, having people over, that kind of thing. That seems pretty cool.
Yeah. So lots of uses for this. We've already thought of three just now. This one is, it was free when I first found the app, but now it's gone back up to $2.99.
Oh, did they had like a deal going?
Yeah, they had a deal going.
We should have podcasted a few days ago, I guess.
Sorry. No, actually the deal was a month ago.
Oh, a month ago. Okay. We were never going to make it.
Nope.
All right, well, let's get into our final story of the week. I love this thing. It's called the Inebriator, and it's a Arduino project that gives you a robotic bartender. So this thing is really cool. You got to go watch the video to see this thing in action over there at lifehacker.com. So check out the show notes and click on this link. And what do you think, Taylor? You going to build one of these?
Me, probably not. No. I'm a fan of making my cocktails by hand. But I still thought it was pretty cool. Cool enough to share.
Absolutely. I mean, this is really what Arduino and Raspberry Pi are all about, is enabling people to do this kind of thing without being a real expert in electronics hardware. They make it easy for stuff like this to get done. And it's really interesting. So they've got like a conveyor belt, and the Arduino controls a couple of valves on the bottles, and the bottles are hanging upside down, and the conveyor belt takes the glass to the right bottle and then distributes the correct amount of whatever it is. And then it finally rests off to the left and flashes an LED under the glass.
Yeah.
That's a nice touch.
The LED under the glass is a really nice touch, yeah.
Yeah, that's
so my favorite part is that it has 15 pre-programmed drink recipes, and I'm sure you could add more if you wanted to. And so that comes from 9 different bottles of alcohol and 5 mixer tubes.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. We should build one for the end user. Actually, that would end poorly, I think.
We'd have to build two. Otherwise, we'd have to get an office.
Oh, yeah. I guess we can't do that over Skype, can we?
No.
So, Taylor, if somebody were to try to get a hold of you, how would they do so?
I'd imagine they'd have to run really fast and grab me, maybe tackle me from the legs. I'm pretty finicky, though, so I'd probably kick real hard and then run away again. But I don't know, maybe if they had a really strong grip or like a taser or something, that might do it. They could get a hold of me that way.
Wow. If you want to get a hold of me, you can just do so on Twitter at Chris Hale Barnes. That's the simplest way. But
Well, you're welcome to send me a message on Twitter. That's at TaylorPhone.
But don't try
to get a hold of me.
Yeah, don't try to literally chase you down the street. Or maybe you should. Maybe that can be the end user game.
Kind of like Zombies Run?
Yes, exactly right.
The All end right. user run.
Well, that'll do it for this week. Let's get out of here, Mr. Marr. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, at thedigitalmediazone.com under The End User. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts that you should have a listen to. Have a look at Entertainment 2.0. Phil Lozen was guesting on this week's Entertainment 2.0, so check that out when it's published. And you can also check out Phil Lozen on Scene in HD. And to round out the lineup, we've got the Movie Podcast. You can send us some feedback at theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can just ping us on Twitter. Together, we are at @theenduser. Join us live in the chat room as we record every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.